to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is implementation considerations for multi-instance queue managers in WebSphere MQ cluster environments. Today's presenter is Yana Johnson. Yana has been with the WebSphere MQ L2 support team since 2002 and is responsible for resolving issues including setup, implementation, and troubleshooting of WebSphere MQ. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Yana.
Okay, and thank you, Joseph. Hello and welcome. Let's get started. Let's go to slide number 2, please. Okay, so here is our agenda, all the things that we're going to talk about. We're going to cover briefly what is the multi-instance queue manager, how to implement it within a cluster. We're going to touch the limitations, the recommendations, examples, and finish up with the summary Q&A session. Okay, so let's move on and go to slide number 3. Okay, so this is the basic setup for multi-instance queue manager. We have a machine A, which is an active node, since this is where QM1 is currently running. And we have on the right the machine B, which is acting as a standby node. And QM1 is sharing the data on the shared file system, okay? What it gives us is that no matter on which box QM1 is running, the clients as well as the queue managers will be able to talk to QM1. And this is the kind of a feature that the multi-instance queue manager would bring to the table at the 7.01 release, okay? So let's move on to slide number 4 to talk a little bit more about it. So basically, we have QM1, which is running on the machine A, and if there is, you know, anything to happen, either with the queue manager or the machine, the MQ failover will be initiated, and the QM1 will be failed over on the machine B. All right? So let's move on to slide 5. Okay, so once the QM1 queue manager has failed over on the machine B, of course, the machine B will become the inactive node. And at that point, clients and the queue managers will be able to reconnect, and the data will be able to flow again and back to normal. Okay? This is pretty much how it is going to run. Now, let's go to slide number 6. Okay? In order to learn more on how to set up as well as to configure the multi-instance queue manager, there was a WISTI that was given last year by Barry Robbins, and here's a link on the slide that you can go to. And when you have some time, please look over it. You will be able to follow the slides and set up your very own multi-instance queue manager, okay? Let's move on. So if you already have the queue manager and you would like to make it a multi-instance queue manager and running on the Unix box, there is a set of steps that you can do to be able to convert your queue manager to be a multi-instance one. Okay? At this time, there is no such way if you're running, say, on the ZOS or the Windows box. All right? So let's move on to slide 7. Okay? So that we can go over the conversion steps. Okay? The conversion steps should be performed by the root user and the machines that will be mounting the NFS shared file systems will have to be provided root access to the file system, okay? For the sake of what we're going to talk about, the assumptions are as follows. The default directories that we're going to work with are var-mqm, qmdrs, as well as var-mqm log. And for the NSS share file system, we're going to take the paths of /malt-iln/qmdata for the qmdata and /multiln/logdata for the logs. And for the name of the queue manager, we're going to assume a name of my.qmdr. And let's move on to slide 8. Okay. So the first step that you're going to have to do is to move the queue manager data and the log data to the NSS file share system. So what you will have to do is to copy the var-mqm, qmdrs, myqmgr to /multiln/qmdata, and you'll have to do the same for the log data, okay? The reason that we ask that you do a, you know, CP for a copy instead of a move is if you move, then you may lose the links, you know, that you may have had before. With the copy, the links will be there, and they're not going to go anywhere. Also, if you copy and you have an issue, you can always, you know, roll back the change. All right? So the next step after that is you're going to retrieve the data from the mqs.ini file, okay? MQ provides the tool for that. It is the command dstmqinf. So you're going to issue a command dstmqinf space myqmgr, okay? Now, what you're going to see is the queue manager stanza with the name of the queue manager in the directory and the prefix, okay? So we're going to remove the queue manager information from the mqs.ini file. And again, there is a tool for that too. The command is rmvmqinf space queue manager name. And let's move on to slide number 9 to continue with our steps here. Once you have removed all the info about my.qmgr from the mqs.ini file, we're going to have to add it back in, but the catch is when you add it back in, we're going to alter the data path to point to the NSS share file system, okay? So, again, it is nice that there is a tool for that. The command is add mqinf, as shown on the slide, and you will have to specify the path for the data as /multiln/qmdata/myqmanager, right? In order to verify the results of the command, again, you can use dstmqinf command, dstmqinf space myqmgr, and when you look at the what will come back from this tool, look at the data path, and the data path should be reflecting the new path on the NSS share file system. So data path would be equal to multiln/qmdata/myqmgr. Okay? And let's move on to slide number 10. Okay? Next step is to alter the qm.ini file. Now, unfortunately, there is no tool at this time to do that, so this is something that you will have to do by hand. And an objective here is to change the log path to point to the logs which are now at the NFS share file system. So make sure that in the qm.ini file, the log path would point to /multiln/logdata/myqmanager. Okay? At this point, once that's done, you are ready to verify the setup of my.qmanager. And the way you can do that is to simply try and start this queue manager, SDRMQM, space my queue manager name, okay? If everything is set up correctly, the queue manager will go up, okay? You can even issue run MQSC to make sure that that will work as well. And if everything is up and running and everything is great, feel free to shut down this queue manager as you would do usually with andmqm minus I command. All right, so let's move on to slide number 11. Okay, so the next step, you do not have to do it, but you know that we would always like to keep things clean. So this is the list of the files as well as the directories that you can remove from the NFS file share system, the /multi-ln/qmdata/myqmgr directory, okay? So this is the list of items that you are going to have to remove, okay? And again, this would be removed from multi-ln/qmdata/myqmanager directory. And let's move on to slide number 12. Okay? So the next step, once we have successfully verified that the queue manager is able to stop normally, we will have to remove all the files and the directories from var mqm qmgrs my queue manager directory except the following items: at app, at ipcc, at qmgr, and at qmpersist. Okay? And at that point, last step is we're going to remove the log files as well as the directory with the rm minus r command. So it's rm minus r slash var slash mqm slash log slash my queue manager. And the reason we do that is because all this data by this time is on the NFS shared file system. Okay? So at this point, that's all there is to it, and you will be able to use your multi-instance queue manager, and you're done. All right? So let's move on to slide 13 and to the next point of our presentation here. We're going to talk about how to implement the multi-instance queue manager within a cluster, and we will start with the limitations. So let's go on to slide number 14, Joseph. Thank you. All right. The first and foremost thing that you guys need to remember is that when the failover is taking place, the system IP is not going to be carried over from machine A to the machine B. Okay? So they will always have their own IPs. This will affect the communications between the 701 queue manager and the older queue managers. Okay? So let's go on to slide number 15. Mainly, what I mean by this is that at 701, there is a new code that has been introduced to where in the con name of the channel, you can specify more than one host name. Okay, like down here. So in the con name, you would have the machine A port, comma, and then the machine B port. You can do this for both the cluster sender, you know, as well as the cluster receiver. As you know, in pre-701 queue managers, this is not the case. We have always been able to only specify, you know, one of the host names. Okay? Now, even if you specify more than one host name, while you're trying to define a channel, you know, you're not going to see an error. However, if you try to use this channel, when it tries to run, it will only read the first name in the string, okay? And if this is not the box where the multi-instance queue manager is running currently, the channel is going to error out. you will never try the back-end machine because the code is not there to do this. Okay? So let's move on to slide number 16. Okay? The next issue that may crop up is if you're thinking about making a multi-instance key manager to be a full repository, the issue that may arise is that if in the cluster you have other key managers that are lower in level than 701, okay? And if they are, they will be forced pretty much to define a separate channel to each of the possible the locations where the multi-instance key manager could be running, okay? Within itself, it's not an issue, but if, for example, you have, you know, a partial repository which is trying to send the data to the full, and it has the data in the system, cluster transmit queue, you know, ready to go, and at this point, a failover tries to take place, what is going to happen, the second channel is going to go running, which is great, but the data, which is already in the system cluster transmit queue, was already set to use the, you know, the first channel, okay? So since that channel is not going to run, the data doesn't go anywhere until there is a failover back, so that the original channel will go running, only then this data will be able to get to the full repository key manager, okay? What this may lead to is a potential data buildup in the system cluster transmit queue, okay? And this is something that we really, you know, do not want to see on the live box. So let's move on to slide number 17, Joseph. Okay. The last limitation, but not least, on ZOS, a con name attribute has a limit of 48 characters. Okay. On the distributed system, it's 256. Okay. So if you have a ZOS key manager, which is trying to hook to the multi-instance key manager, it is going to have to find a way to fit the long host names, okay? There will be times where you will not be able to do that. So a workaround for this problem is to either set up the DNS alias, which will point to the long host name, or you can simply use the IP addresses, okay? And they will fit in there, and your ZOS key manager will be able to talk to the EMI key manager with no issues. So this is something that you should keep in mind. All right, let's move on to slide number 18. Okay, and let's talk about the recommendations. Slide number 19, Joseph. Thank you. Okay. We do recommend on the multi-instance key manager that you use a listener service so that the listener, RunMQL SR, is going to start when key manager comes up and going to go down when key manager ends, okay? And I'm giving you the command on how to do this. It's define listener, and you can name it whatever you want, TRP type TCP. The control is going to have to be set to queue manager, of course, and on the port number, all right? The next recommendation is, in most cases, a cluster really needs only two of the full repositories. Okay, there's really no reason to have more, but we advise that you do not use a multi-instance key manager as a full repository, okay? For the reasons that we have just talked about. Moreover, when you do have a multi-instance key manager, which is you know, said to be the full repository, it will add the layer of complexity, basically, when you have to move around the full repository, you know, from box A to box B, okay? And last but not least, since you have more than one full repository, if one of them happens to go down, you still, you know, have one more. So the key manager within the cluster will already have the channels to the second full repository. So they will be able to get the data from that. So the bottom line is there is really no need to make the full repository key managers to be the multi-instance key managers. Okay? And let's move on to slide number 20. Okay? Another recommendation is ideally what we would want is if there is a 701 key manager, which is going to be part of the cluster, is a multi-instance key manager, we would like to have all the key managers in the cluster, of course, to be at 701. But we all know that in the real world, most likely we're going to have the key managers that will range in key release from 5.3 to 6, you know, to 7.0 and so forth. So in order for the multi-instance key manager to make itself available to the cluster members, what we would advise to do is to have your multi-instance key manager to run on a default port, which is 1414, and have a con name blank on the cluster receiver channel, okay? The reason for that is every time the multi-instance key manager comes up, it is going to let everybody in the cluster know the IP that it is running on, okay? And in turn, the other key managers that are in the cluster will get that information and will be able to create an outer defined cluster sender channel back to the multi-instance key manager. All right? And they will, thus they will be able to find this key manager no matter on which box it is running. Again, in order for that to happen, the 701 key manager, which is the multi-instance specifically, must be running on user port 1414. And let's move on to next slide, slide 21. All right, so let's move on to the examples of what we just talked about. Slide number 22. Okay, so here we have the cluster of key managers. We have the full repositories as Q1 and Q2, and the partial repository is Q3, and we have another partial repository, which happens to be the multi-instance key manager, which is MIQMGR. Okay? So if we look at case one, where all of your key managers in the cluster are 701 or later, basically what you can do is to define your channels to contain more than one host name and the con name as shown here, con name machine A and then the port number and then machine B and then the port number, okay? So that way, all the 701 key managers will be able to find each other with no problems whatsoever. Okay? So this is an easy one. Now again, in case two, where we have only some of the key managers that are 701, again, as we just talked, you would want to define cluster receiver on the multi-instance key manager with a con name blank, as shown on the slide. And again, this key manager must run on port 1414. If it's any other port, it is not going to work. So let's move on to slide number 23. Okay, and we were moving on to the summary. Slide number 24. Right? So here are all the things that we have talked about. We did a brief introduction to the multi-instance key manager, have talked about the limitations and the recommendations when we're thinking about to include the multi-instance key manager within an MQ cluster, and went over the configuration examples. And let's move on to the next slide. Slide number 25. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide the valuable online resources for the WebSphere product. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on the support pages points you to the webcast and the conference information. Please visit WebSphere.org for the user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of the self-help modules to get the new user up to the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for the Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view TMRs online. And the My Support link on all the product support pages lets you sign up for the weekly email updates for the products that are of interest you. All right, and let's move on to slide number 26, Joseph. Okay, and now is the time for the Q&A session. So let's go on to slide number 27.
Thank you, Yana, for an excellent presentation. At this point in time, Matt, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question is from Keith Hersey. Your line is open.
Hi. I think I must have read through some of the other information, but in this presentation you only covered how to convert an existing queue manager to become a multi-instance queue manager.
Right.
Is it also possible to take a queue manager and create it from scratch to be multi-instance?
Yes. And this is actually covered in the Westy that I have posted, I believe, the slide 6.
Yeah,
and
I opened that one up already, but I didn't have a chance to look at it during the presentation.
Right, right, yep. Yep, that's where you will find it all.
Okay, good. I thought there was a way to do that and that I had seen it already, but I wanted to be sure because my coworker was asking about it during presentation.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
All right, no problem.
Our next question is from Susan Conant. Your line is open.
Hi. I really enjoyed this presentation. It's very good. But here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
You have indicated that we're going to relocate the log files and the queue manager files, but nothing was done with the error files. Was that on purpose, or am I missing something?
This was done on purpose because we would want them to be on the local drive. So that the processes will be able to write to it at all.
So that means that it's a requirement that they have three different file systems for MQ versus, like, some of our SAs just create one file system, var MQM. Is that right?
Oh, I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, if you're putting the var MQM queue manager onto the shared file system
Right.
rather than the local file system, does it have to be its own file system, or can it just be a directory?
Actually, it will have to be the NSS shared file system.
Right. So that means that we now have a requirement to create three file systems rather than being able to just use one.
Well, the queue manager error logs are actually part of the VAR-QMGRS QMGR, but you would still have the VAR MQM file system for things like FDCs and such. So, yes, you would have three total.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Our next question is from Terry Enochson. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks. I have a question about clusters using multi-instance key managers in clusters.
Mm-hmm.
I know in documentation it states that the full repositories are not required to be up to version 6 or version 7.
Correct.
In order for version 7 key managers to participate. But I was wondering if that's still the case with the multi-instance key manager.
It is your call. You can have them at 6 or, you know, 7.0 or 7.1. The only caveat that we do put in is that you don't make them the MI key managers.
You don't make them? Oh, the full repositories you don't make MI. Okay.
Yes, yes, exactly.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Our next question is from Shandu. Your line is open.
Hi. It's a very good presentation this morning. I really enjoyed it. And my question is, like, is there any specific NFS version that need to be for using this multi-instance queue manager?
Yeah, it's NFS 4, version
okay.
4.
Okay, so, like, what all the permissions like that need to be set up on that?
The mounting machines will need to have a root access to the NFS file share system.
Okay.
When you're going through your setup.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Yeah, we'll move on. The next question then will be from Rajesh Paled. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks.
Hello.
I have a question regarding one of the recommendations mentioned on the slide number 19.
Mm-hmm.
It says, like, do not use multi-instance queue managers as full repositories.
Right.
But in our case, we have just two queue managers, and those are full repositories.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you, recommend, if we have to utilize, the multi-instance benefits, actually?
If you have just the two full repositories, you could do that, I guess, but still, we would advise against it. But the simple reason is that it would just add the complexity to the fact that will have to be moving the whole repository, from, a box A to box B. And there is really no need to do that.
The thing is, when we have just two queue managers having a full repository and both of the queue managers are in, 701,
mm-hmm.
and we have all the common logs and the data in a shared file.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
what makes it difficult, actually, complications, when moving from box A to B, actually,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
when it is in a shared, common shared disk, right, actually, all the data and the logs. So why it is so complicated, actually?
The reason is that when the failover happens, you will have to unmount the NSF from, say, box B, and then the mount it, on the box A.
At this point, I didn't get.
So,
there's no need to unmount anything, right, actually, because the failover happens from box A to B automatically.
Well, right, but under the covers, I believe that the NSF file share will be mounted, from one box to another, but I will have to verify that.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Our next question is from Rayo Maru. Your line is open.
Hi, Anna.
Hello.
Hi. Actually, thanks for the presentation, and I missed some of the portion. I joined lately. And I've implemented a multi-instance queue manager already at our place. We are using broker also on top of it, multi-instance broker.
Mm-hmm.
The question that I have is basically in traditional HA, we have virtual IP, which will also get transferred to the second node. and clients automatically gets connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm able to do a switch failover using NMQM-S and then the queue manager. It's automatically failing over to the second one.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that how clients will can connect actually. Is there any new facility they can use wildcard IPs or something?
Actually, the clients have a new reconnect feature.
Okay.
So they will be able to reconnect to the queue manager after it has failed over to the new box.
Okay. So is there any documentation on this somewhere?
I would expect it to have in the 701 client. Also, there is a WSI for the 701 client that goes over that.
Okay.
At this time, I have no further questions in queue.
Thank you, Matt. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.